stumble out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen. Pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to...
Hello there, lollygaggers. Another week on tap here. Lollygagging Sports. I am Bo Reed along with Samantha Button and Matthew Irby. You know, Samantha, you know, Dolly Parton's been in the news lately for reasons that are just very disturbing. So I wanted to share a little happy Dolly to start the show this week.
Why, because people thought she died?
Yeah, that whole thing, and then the AI nonsense with her and Reba McEntire. Just like, you know, I'm just, why are people such assholes? Like, I get,
let it be. It's AI's fault.
AI has created even more assholes in the world than we thought we had. I'll buy that.
It's a tool for the assholes.
I'll buy that. Well, at least Dolly is okay, as far as we know.
Yeah, we love Dolly. So we want Dolly to be okay.
So we have that. But other than that, how are things going with you, Samantha? How are you doing?
I'm good. I did not work 9 to 5 today.
I did not either. I worked, I think, longer, actually, by the time it was done. Oh, boy. Fun times. Irby, how about you? Are you holding up with this weird summer hanging on forever in Texas thing we're dealing with?
Right, yeah. It's October and it's getting there. It's been cooler lately. I'll take that.
At night.
Well, in the mornings too have been good. My eldest, now that his cross country season over, is not happy about it. He's like, yeah, this would have been nice a month ago. Yeah, your timing wasn't great there, buddy. Welcome to real life. So yeah.
All right. Well, we got a fun show on tap. We're gonna have some more fun with some mascots later. And trains have made the rundown as well. But first, we got our usual rapid fire. So, Samantha, you want to kick us off there?
All right, guys. 10 questions. Some of them have right answers. Some of them do not. These guys do not get any time to think. They do not get any time to explain themselves. They just have to give me whatever they got off the top of their head, and they will have the opportunity at the end of this to explain one of their answers. So, are you ready?
Am I ever?
Well, you know, sometimes.
I'm gonna try and follow the rules this time and answer quick.
You know,
that's
always fun when you recap the rules, because I realize that we do a really good job of not following said rules.
Yeah.
We'll see how you do this week. I'm not super optimistic about it, but we shall see. All right. So, you know, don't you worry. We've got some baseball. We've got some NFL. But there is something that we must address before we get to those things. And I have to begin by quoting Meek Mill and say that I used to pray for times like this. James Franklin has been fired.
Yes.
God bless. Look, I mean, maybe perhaps I should be quoting Taylor Swift instead. He did, in fact, girl boss too close to the sun. And now he's been canceled.
Mm-hmm.
So, no longer living the life of a showgirl. Well, actually, no. You know what? He kind of is. He could be cloaked in Gucci and in scandal because he got a $49 million buyout. So, where are you guys at on this? Not on James Franklin being fired, because we're all happy about that, right? Just had to get that out there, but... Irby, I know who your candidate is because it is the same as mine and my husband's for who we're hoping will take this job. But, Bo, do you have a preferred front runner for this job?
Bill Belichick.
Bill Belichick. More on that later. I don't know. If he's bringing Jordan, I don't know if we're interested in that. But, Irby, do you want to tell people where the rest of the lollygagging crowd is at on this particular job search?
Yes, I would love to see the return of Nick Saban to Happy Valley.
Oh, yeah. Here's hoping. He would be an excellent fit for the program and the way that the program functions and sort of how it functions within the framework of the school and whatnot. So what do we have to pay you? Can we take some of James's money back and offer it to Nick Saban? Don't you worry, guys. Penn State has plenty of money. But does Nick Saban want a job? I don't know. We'll find out. All right, to baseball. So we need to go back, and there is something we need to discuss going back to the series that ended last week. Very meaningful for this particular show because Philly got mound portaled out of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we've ever seen this before. I know we have had a playoff series end on a defensive error, which I know you guys don't want to talk about because it was you in 2015. Mm-hmm. But the Mound Portal ate a playoff team. To my knowledge, this is the first instance of the Mound Portal swallowing a playoff team. Yes?
Yes, I think you're right. At least, at the very least, I can't think of another instance. So it sure seems like it. One. Yeah.
Yeah.
This was an absolute Jonah and the whale swallowing here. My gosh, Billy.
Oh, yes. Oh, R.I.P. Billy. I want to talk to you guys a little bit about Toronto starting Savage in game two. Easy now for us to look at that and say, well, that was a mistake, as they are now down to nothing going into recording. They are playing game three as we record this on Wednesday night. But was that a mistake?
Well, yeah. But I think the real question is that the way that Seattle came out hitting, I'm not so sure it mattered. Like, that team, about halfway through game one, locked in.
Okay, well, that's about what I guess that's really what I'm asking then. It's like, so maybe it wasn't a mistake. Maybe it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's worth noting, you know, when we talk about, you know, he did come in relief during the Yankees series, but I'm sure part of the strategy here, and RB, I wanted to get your thoughts on this, is, you know, of most teams, the Yankees included, use traject, but it doesn't travel, right? The machine doesn't travel. So they can only do it at home. So you can see the advantage of them thinking like, okay, you'll do it here when you're on the road, right? And it's like, okay, but like Seattle's at home. So theoretically, they could use their trajects. So I don't know if that played into this or not. Irby, what are your thoughts?
I like that. I like that approach. I think, answering the overall question of was it a mistake or not, who started the game for Toronto? What are the first three letters of his last name? Yes.
All right. So, not a lot going on in the other series, Dodgers, Brewers. Notably, game two, repeatedly labeled wild, despite the fact that this was a 2-1 game. So my question for you is less about this game and more about, can a 2-1 game ever really be wild in baseball parlance?
No, I really don't think so.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the verbiage is bad there. Yeah. Irby, what do you think?
Not a 9-inning 2-1.
I just think by definition, wild would imply more scoring, right? Like, it could be intense or weird, sure, but not wild. Okay, so I need to speak to you about Humpy the Salmon. Humpy has had a rough season. He has not won a salmon race in Seattle until the 15-inning game that was played in the last series against the Tigers. And the Mariners, as all good baseball teams do, repeat during the mid-14th whatever goes on in the mid-7th. And I love that baseball does this. I love that teams play take the ball game again. I love that they rerun their races when a game goes this long. God bless. This is why it is the best sport. Uh-huh. But Humpy finally won a race for the first time ever. Do you think this was an omen for the Mariners going forward?
Sure seems like it, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, I have to wonder, you know, does Humpy have to win every race from this point on in the postseason? Like, does he have to? Like, will Humpy need to win
tonight?
For example,
I think he does to prove it's an omen, but he doesn't have to win every race for the Mariners to win the World Series. They seem to be in position to do that on themselves.
I don't know if I agree. with that. Irby, what do you think?
If I'm in that meeting, that marketing meeting, I am standing on my chair and saying he has to win the rest of our home games. We have to do our part. They're doing their part. We have to do our part.
I agree.
This Let Humpy help you. Creed-esque.
Help Humpy help
you. It worked!
Yeah, and this is like way less gross. So
true. Very true.
Allow Humpy to assist you. All right. We must move on to the NFL. And unfortunately, I'm very sorry, but it is time for another moron alert.
Oh, boy.
So this, we need one of those little signs. This podcast has gone 3 weeks without a moron alert. I'm sorry, that streak has now been broken. Because Brian Branch in the Detroit and Kansas City game, or I should say after, technically, the Detroit and Kansas City game, decided to walk up and slap a Kansas City player in the helmet after the game during the handshake, which was spectacular, by the way. I loved it. Do you have any thoughts on this? I mean, it was sort of funny. It sort of produced a baseball-style fight, which was delightful. Patrick Mahomes ended up at the bottom of the pile, all because, like, this idiot.
Yeah, from an entertainment standpoint, absolutely, I agree with you. That was funny as hell.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what I would focus on is that Dan Campbell handled that absolutely perfectly after the game. Which that's what you would expect out of him anyway. No doubt there's going to be some talking to some people. Because, I mean, as entertaining as it was, now it's a distraction. That's what everyone's talking about this week with the Lions right now. That's what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Irby? I did not get to watch the game because I was actually at my son's game. But hey,
you didn't need to see the game. You only need to see
it. That's okay. Had you told me while sitting at my son's game, Brian Branch will be punching a Kansas City Chief, who would it be? And I absolutely would have answered Juju Smith-Schuster, right?
Yes. Exactly. I love that it was an open-handed slap, too. I mean, he didn't even punch him. He open-handed slapped him, which almost feels more disrespectful. And then the way that he fell over, like, that was an epic flop there. And you're like, my guy, the clock is up. You don't have to flop anymore, man. Like, it was quite impressive. Very NBA of him. Delightful. Okay, a lot of upsets last week. Philly, Dallas, Buffalo. Any of these mean anything to you, or do you think it's just like, yeah, this happens?
No, that was one of the worst slates of NFL games I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, everyone just sucked, right? Like,
yeah.
Everyone just decided to suck this week.
It was bad. You know, so you had some teams, some's got to win, some's got to lose. That's what happened.
Watch it,
flush it, move on.
Yeah. Irby, any of these concerning to you, or just...
No, nothing that surprising. This is what happened. I am scared for the Ravens now, going back to what we said a couple weeks ago.
Join me, will you?
Yeah.
Well, they're off this week, so they have a bye. Don't you worry.
Can't lose.
But someone lost. Someone who's been fired, Brian Callahan, 6 weeks into his second NFL season, has been fired as the head coach of the Titans. Your thoughts?
You know, I always have trouble, especially with an NFL team and a college team, for example. I always struggle with this. Like, you gave him a year and a half to turn around an organization that was awful. I don't feel good about it. Now, there may be some stuff behind the scenes. There may be some disagreements between him and the front office, and the front office won. I don't know. But I don't feel good at all about it. You get the guy the keys. You're supposed to have time to actually build a team, and they never gave it to him. So, that's right.
Yeah, I think it's one thing to fire somebody after a year if their coaching is resulting in poor performance. But I don't know that we can attribute all of this to Brian Callahan specifically. Irby, thoughts?
Same. I don't like this. It's not his fault. You didn't put the roster around him. You might be building it, but this has got to be disagreement in the front office.
Almost has to be.
Yeah, I think you're right. All right, so let's talk about somebody who has had a lot of time, and maybe it's time to go. Kevin Stefanski, pretty polarizing figure amongst the Cleveland faithful in terms of how much of this do you attribute to him? Is he any good as a coach? Should he be fired? Does he need to leave the org for his own sanity if you don't think the problem is him? Thoughts?
I think you can make the argument that he's not all the problem, but he is some of the problem. You know, the Browns front office has screwed up some things royally over the last handful of years, but that team is still more talented in the way they play.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think, you know, Kevin Stefanski can't be blamed for the Baker debacle, the Deshaun Watson debacle, right? That's the owner.
Right.
And the GM acting as a puppet for the mm-hmm. owner, and the coach can't do anything about that. But you're right. They have lost a lot of games where execution and on-field decisions did come into play. So, yeah, I'm not sure. I think he's great. I don't know, Irby, where are you at on Stefanski?
No, it's not great. This is year six. This would make sense of a time to make a change. Like, no one would be that shocked. So maybe it is time for a change, and that's for both parties.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Perhaps a change of scenery is in order for the coach mm-hmm. as well. Agreed. Okay, last thing. Early MVP candidate that you like?
Ooh. I can't believe I'm about to say this, but Danny Dimes.
Are you serious? That is delightful. I hope that happens. I will buy a lottery ticket. But yeah, well, we love Danny Dimes. So this is a pro. This podcast is pro Danny Dimes. So we are happy to see him performing so well. Yeah, fun long shot. Irby?
That's good. I like that, though. I'll cheer for you. Bijan Robinson.
Ooh, also a good one, yeah.
Never going to happen.
No, I know. That's why I got to do it now.
I was actually asking you for a serious candidate, not who you want to win.
He should be a serious candidate.
No, he shouldn't. He's not a quarterback, and he's not going to be able to take his team anywhere.
That's what I hate is that that's what it, you're absolutely right. It's the quarterback. It's a quarterback award. So if I have to pick a quarterback, then.
Well, you don't have to pick a quarterback. You just have to pick somebody who's actually going to be able to make an impactful difference for their team as far as getting them into the postseason. And you can't just pick somebody because they're good and you like them.
Even though he's a Longhorn, then I'll go the opposite direction.
That's exactly why you're not allowed to do it.
Yeah. I will stay within the division. Baker Mayfield.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of talk of that.
And I like Baker.
This is definitely one of those things that would have sounded insane a couple of years ago. But yeah, no, I agree. I think Baker Mayfield's in the conversation. I think Dak Prescott is in the conversation. I think Jared Goff is in the conversation. Jared Goff will never win, right? He will never be allowed to win. But I think these are all people we need to be thinking about because it looks like the big fish are not in the picture. This season, at least not so far, although eyes on Josh Allen. I don't think he's going to really sound out of the race. Okay, anything you want to come back to?
I would just like to mention that Danny Dimes, I do think is, I really wasn't joking there. Like, you know, it's all fun and games, but if he keeps playing the way he's playing, you at least have to put him in the conversation.
Oh, no, I agree with you. I mean, the question is, can he keep playing this way, right? Is the bottom going to fall out of this? But yeah, I agree. Yeah. If he keeps playing this way, then yeah, I think we absolutely have to acknowledge him as a valid candidate. Yeah, I agree.
Giants fans would never, ever get over it. Ever.
I feel bad for Giants fans because I know they all want to die right now for like a lot of reasons. Well, things have improved slightly. Things have improved there.
A little bit.
It's getting a little bit better. So perhaps everybody is better off against speaking of change of scenery candidates. Perhaps that's for all parties. Irby, anything you want to come back to?
Come back to the Phillies mound portal.
Yeah.
I think this will go down as one of the most heartbreaking ends to a series ever. I mean, we talked about it.
Yeah.
Never really happened. Anything like that. Just because there's errors, there's mental break. This was next level bad for me. I don't understand what's the thought process. I know there's the catcher in me coming out of, I hate pitchers when it comes to this stuff too. Everybody's pointing. My gosh, who is it running? Isn't even running down the line.
Yes.
The batter Kirkering, I hope he can get over this and put this behind him, everything. But man, I don't know how. This is going to stick with him forever. This was, sorry, Phillies fans. Maybe I should have said turn this off or real quick while I'm talking. But this will go down as one of the most painful endings ever in baseball.
Yeah, I agree. It's the fact that, like, look, if the play had to have been made at home and he throws wide, sure, that happens.
Yes,
you know, I mean, absolutely, that happens. But like, I don't know what happened in his brain, especially when, you know, the catcher is pointing, you know, Real Muto is pointing down to first. He's saying, throw it over there. You had plenty of time. Like, to be able to ignore all of those things going on around you, like every instinct that you should have, the knowledge of how many outs there are, where the play is, your catcher is screaming at you, the batter isn't even trying to go to first, all these things, and all you can think about is that runner going home. Yikes. Yikes.
Yep, that hurt.
Isn't this one of those things, like, they drill the hell out of this? Throughout.
Do they, though? Do they?
In February and March.
I don't think that they do.
See, but maybe they should.
But I don't believe they ever drill the hell out of any of it. Like, have you seen fielding practice for pitchers? It's quite casual.
Maybe. Well,
won't be going forward.
I was about to say, I'm curious. Let's see what happens with Philly.
We say people field their position well as pitchers when they, like, just don't freak out most of the time. So I don't know that anybody is being drilled in the way that they should be defensively as pitchers.
The conversation's never happening. Especially the catcher, when you're coordinating and talking who go where, you're talking past the pitcher because he's focused on one other thing. And it's why, yes, it needs to be, you just listen to your catcher or watch. And that's the craziest thing is, he had time to field the grounder, bobble the grounder, pick it up, look at the catcher, see, throw to first. He could then pivot to first, and he could have just tossed it and still made the out. What was it, 55 feet. When he was letting go of the ball to go home, the batter was still 55 feet from first base.
Oof. Well, okay, but this is what I mean, right? Is like that you don't even need to drill to know that, like, just what is the catcher telling you to do? And they do know that. They do know that, and most pitchers do respect that. So we're back to the mound portal. He just got mound portal. Yes. Sorry, guys. We can't explain this away. He was simply eaten by the mound portal.
So then there's the thing. Is even the mound portal getting a little too bold now? Like, that is take out a team, an entire team? That is bold.
Look, the mound portal is just doing what anyone does with unchecked power. It is testing the fences. It is like it's the velociraptor. Tap, tap, tap. Testing, testing. I'm checking the fence. I'm checking the fence. And the mound portal learns something here. And the mound portal learns that it can eat an entire playoff team. So look out. Look out. All right. Well, would you guys like some more death and destruction?
Always.
Not via the supernatural entities, although I don't know that we really know. I mean, does anybody really know where this person is from? We're gonna talk about somebody of somewhat uncertain origins here. I believe we don't know where she's from, right? Like, maybe she came from the mound portal. But we need to speak, because we have not spoken enough about Bill Belichick and Jordan Hudson and their epic romance. Did she come from the mound portal? Is that where she's from? I don't know. Nobody knows. But we wanted to talk to you about this because there have been a number of public train wrecks involving Bill and Jordan. And they seem to be weathering them pretty well. The rest of us, not so much. So we would like to speak to you about train wrecks, both metaphorical and literal. And I'm going to speak to you of the metaphorical parts of this. And Irby is going to speak to you of the literal parts of this. And we are going to discuss Bill and Jordan and their train wreck of a romance. And we are going to compare it to real historical train wrecks. So, Irby, are you ready?
I'm beyond ready. This is so exciting.
All right. Well, let's begin. Let us go in descending order. And we will count down from five. So let us begin with Jordan installing for the season opening presser at UNC. Jordan installed a gender reveal style balloon arch at Bill's presser. And Bill had to stand under that balloon arch. And Bill looked about as happy as most people look standing under a balloon arch.
Especially him.
Oh, yeah, that was a bad one. When I look at this one, what came to mind, actually kind of quickly, would be the Guadalajara train disaster, January 22nd of 1915. During the Mexican Revolution, then announced president, Venustiano Carranza, he wanted to celebrate a military victory with Pancho Villa during the revolution, and he arranged for the families of the troops to come out via train to celebrate with these soldiers. En route, the engineer lost control of the train during a long, steep descent. Many were thrown off the train during the curves, and it eventually plunged into a deep canyon, killing 600 of the 900 people on board. It is the worst derailment accident in North American history, and the incident was labeled as a propaganda-driven political failure due to reckless oversight.
That tracks.
Look at you, University of North Carolina.
should have just got a balloon arch.
Jeez. Hopefully they didn't have one there waiting for the train.
Could you imagine? We will bring the coffins out. We will bring the bodies, which you will need to identify out through the balloon arch. Oh my gosh. Okay. All right, number four. We're going to go way back to the beginning here. We're going to talk about how Bill and Jordan allegedly met on a flight, about which details are quite nebulous, particularly with regard to the timeline. I have a lot of questions about this. Supposedly, when they met, if you do the math, it looks like 3 years before even he and Linda broke up. Jordan would have been, I keep calling her Jordan because that's what Nora Princiati calls her. I'm sorry, but, you know, don't spell your name that way if you don't want to be called Jordan. So, Jordan, I believe, would have been like an 18-year-old college student when they met. So that's a little icky. But I have a lot of questions here. I mean, how did they end up next to each other on this flight? What was she doing in first class? Or what was he doing in coach? This does not make sense to me. Irby, make it make sense to me. Or just tell me about a train wreck that feels like this incident.
Well, you go back. He said to go back to the beginning. So let's go back pretty far, too, to the great train wreck of 1856.
Ooh.
July 17th, 1856, in White Marsh Township, Pennsylvania. This train wreck actually has a couple other names. If you're from Montgomery County, it is referred to as the Camp Hill disaster. Or from Philadelphia, the major news at the time was called this the Picnic Train Tragedy. Two passenger trains, the Shaka Maxon and the Aramingo, collided head-on due to a miscommunication that led to both trains being on the same track. It is, at the time, was the deadliest railroad catastrophe, with 126 lives lost with the two trains. The Shaka Maxon, you can decide which one of the two, Jordan or Bill, is that one, was running 23 minutes behind schedule and forgot to telegraph its tardiness to the depot.
That's Bill.
The Aramingo waited the customary 15 minutes for the late train before pulling out of its station. Both trains approached each other around a blind curve and had only seconds to notice each other. It wasn't the collision, but the explosion of the boilers that and the subsequent fire that killed most of the people. The sad thing of how, also, let's keep going with Bill and Jordan here. William Vastenorven, the conductor of the Aramingo, escaped uninjured. He felt he was to blame for this. Turns out he would not be. However, he left, reported the incident, and then committed suicide via arsenic. Alfred Hoppel, the conductor of the Shaka Maxon, love that name, he was tried for gross carelessness and manslaughter. He was acquitted because Vastenorven committed suicide. That makes a good reason for committing for the acquittal. The fortunate thing that led from this disaster is the widespread adoption of, you know what, why don't we use the telegraph system to start dispatching where the trains are at?
Well, if only somebody had communicated the seating assignments on that plane more effectively. Irby, that is a perfect comparison. Thank you for that. All right. Number three. We need to talk about the incident in which Jordan abruptly ended an interview when Bill was asked how they met. Now, we just discussed how they met, right? So I'm not sure why he was not allowed to answer that question, But I think I'm more concerned about why she decides when Bill is not allowed to answer a question, right? So this question, which was addressed to Bill, not Jordan, who was just standing in the background, was cut off when Jordan barked, "We're not answering that." And then she spilled a bunch of crumpled papers onto the ground that appeared to be highlighted UNC football documents out of her purse.
Oh, one party talking, the other party being silent, something like that. Well, how about the Marianne derailment? Yeah, that's right. We're going international with this one. December 12th, 1917, in Saint-Michel de Marianne, France.
That would be the French pronunciation, though.
All right, there we go.
Vive la France, yes.
So this would be in the French Alps. 982 World War I French troops were crammed into 19 passenger cars. These cars were rated for 25 troops per car. So you can do the math pretty quick of, yes, not good. Only three of the cars had pneumatic brakes. Some of the cars didn't even have brakes at all. Yeah. Between 675 and 800 of the troops died in France's deadliest rail accident to date. As the train went down the winding descent, it started in a controlled 6 miles per hour. But because of the gross overweight and lack of brakes, before long, the lack of power brake led to the train eventually out of control at 84 miles per hour. Supposed to be doing 6, it's doing 84. Bad math. Math ain't mathin'. The fire, fed by overheated brakes, obviously, wooden carriages, munitions, and this occurring in a narrow gap in the mountain terrain, the fire of the train actually burned for 2 days. The engineer, not sure how this one fits in, so help me with this one, Samantha. The engineer, focused solely on the failing brakes and the excessive speed, did not notice the absence of all the derailed cars until he reached the station some 1,300 meters away. The interesting thing here is this incident was actually largely suppressed by the French military authorities. In fact, the details were kept under wraps until 1998. As this occurred during World War I, it was followed by huge protests and mutinies from the French army, and it's the second deadliest train catastrophe in terms of accurately known casualties.
Do you think one of them had German intelligence documents in their purse?
It's possible. It has to be the engineer. I love that part of the engineer didn't notice that all the cars were gone behind. Like, he's so focused on the brakes, you didn't suddenly realize, you know, the brakes are actually working better. Like, it feels like there's not as much weight. Yeah, because everything's falling off behind you, bro.
Well, listen, Jordan didn't notice that top secret football documents were falling out of her purse because she was too busy, you know, policing Bill's interview. So, you know, these things happen when you are at war/ coaching UNC football. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. All right. Well, this brings us to number two. Bill and Jordan enjoyed a lovely tropical vacation together, during which they took vacation photos in the ocean with Jordan wearing a mermaid tail.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember this one. So we got to go water, right? Yeah.
Let's go with the
Norwalk rail accident. It was in Norwalk, Connecticut, May 6, 1853. The engineer failed to notice the open drawbridge. Thus, the train plunged full speed into a river in the first major U.S. railway disaster. Yes, that's right. The engineer missed, part of me understands this, that there was a signal. It was a tall pole with a red ball on it. He missed that. I kind of understand that. Like, that's the best signal that we have, a pole with a ball on it? And he did not apply the brakes until 400 feet away from the bridge opening. The train actually leapt 52 of the 60-foot gap before striking the opposite abutment. Of the 200 passengers, 48 perished, and another 30 were injured. That's actually pretty amazing considering it just ran into a hill. And many of the passengers actually were included doctors returning from the 6th annual meeting of the American Medical Association in New York City. Many of those doctors and many of the passengers died from drowning.
You think he got distracted because he saw the mermaid?
It could be. You're right there at the water. Mm-hmm. Did he see a mermaid and you missed the little red ball on a pole? Absolutely. 100%.
I think that's what happens. All right. Number one. We must discuss the Nantucket incident, as I'm calling it, in which Jordan and her friend Miss Massachusetts. Jordan was like, what, third runner-up for Miss Maine or something? And by the way, this is Miss USA, so not Miss America. So, like, it's the, like, discount brand beauty pageant, not the good one. Just wanted to point that out. So they decided to crash a fundraiser on Nantucket. This is an annual fundraiser that happens every December. It is a big event for people who participate in Nantucket Society, one of which would be, of course, Linda, Bill's ex. And Jordan was reportedly looking to become part of the Nantucket scene, which, like, LOL, I live in the area, the Nantucket scene. That's very funny to me. But anyway, so she bought a ticket to this. So, you know, technically she's allowed to be there. She bought a ticket. And Linda obviously was not happy about this and asked to have her removed. And I believe she was kind of told, well, you know, she bought a ticket, so there's really nothing we can do about it, regardless of the fact that it's kind of in poor taste. But things devolved. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever been to a fundraiser, but, you know, people tend to tie one on. You know, they pay $10,000 for, like, a shitty steak. So they're going to get their money's worth at the bar, right? So things devolved. And this ended with an altercation between famous Nantucket author Ellen Hildebrand and Jordan. And the police were called. Miss Massachusetts ended up crying in a corner, reportedly. It was quite the meltdown. So very, very exciting stuff. Not quite as good as the, you know, one of our personal favorites here, Bo, you and me, the great Met Gala incident with Matt Harvey.
That will never get old, ever.
Happy to bring that back again. Driving all over town looking for Adriana Lima after she ran off Julino. deeply funny. But, you know, these guys, they get up to some stuff when they go to some fundraisers. And Jordan was causing trouble to Bill. Not present for this one, actually. Not on the scene here. But many hijinks ensued here. Irby, what are we looking at here?
Sounds like a scene where things just kept getting worse, kept getting worse, kept getting worse. Well,
they did.
The Malbone street wreck of 1918, occurred November 1st, 1918 in Brooklyn, New York, a.k.a. the Brightonton Beach Line accident. Had to go with something here in Brooklyn because actually there's never been a train wreck in Nantucket as it's mostly maritime transportation, no yeah. direct rail service.
There are no trains there. You have to take a ferry to get there.
Couldn't do that one. But yes, the Manbone street wreck. 93 to 102 people died, and another estimated 250 of the 650 passengers were injured, making it the deadliest crash in the history of the New York City subway. The events leading to this were a labor strike against the Brooklyn Rapid Transit Company, the BRT company. So there you go. Bill's not present. The actual engineer's not present. And the engineer, or motorman that day, was a dispatcher who had no experience operating the line. Great start there. It occurred between Manbone Street and Prospect Park Station in a reverse curve that was rated for 6 miles per hour. The non-experienced motorman took the took the corner between 30 and 40 miles per hour. Again, the math ain't mathin'. And then as a weird thing of, you know, sometimes they're carnage, sometimes they're not. The first and fourth cars had minor damage. The fifth car had no damage. And it was just the second and the third were a jungle of steel dust and wood splinters. The inexperienced motorman also was unharmed during this, and he left the scene of the accident. Yikes.
Uh-oh.
As it continues to get worse, it took rescuers 45 minutes to descend down to the crash site. and then even longer to get victims medical care because the nearest hospital was overrun by patients dealing with the Spanish flu epidemic. So what did they do? Here you go. Ready? We're going to bring it all back to baseball. A makeshift infirmary was set up at Ebbets Field.
Oh, there you go. This is, I mean, if you're not familiar with the area, the first thing I feel compelled to point out is that, like, I think this is, obviously the train lines are different than they are now, but I think this is kind of akin to the F line. If you're familiar sort of with the subway system now, this is essentially like the route that the F train goes on. I'm a little bit confused because I have to tell you, Brighton Beach and Prospect Park are like nowhere near each other geographically. That is like a solid 20 to 30 minutes further on the F to get all the way out to Brighton Beach. It's basically Coney Island. If you're not familiar with Prospect Park, it's more like Central Brooklyn. So not sure what was really going on there, but it does sound like an ever-devolving situation, much like what happened on Nantucket, where, as you pointed out, they do not have trains. But, you know, they both are water adjacent, so.
Well, yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah, okay, so that, thank you for that on the, I'm curious now why they called it that.
It may have been, I wonder if it was referred to as the Brighton Line at that point, because Brighton might have been the last stop. So sometimes
that is
referred to by the final stop on the line.
And maybe I didn't say that, yes, the Brighton Beach Line.
Yeah, so they're probably, okay. Yeah, they're referring to it, like they still do this with subways now, where you kind of refer to the train as wherever the last stop in the direction you're going is. So Brighton, no longer the final stop on the F line, but I think it's second to last now. And Brighton Beach technically is the end of the line there because it's the ocean. So that's probably what it is. But it sounds to me like, so the accident was actually near Prospect Park, which is like a pretty good distance from there.
And it's the line actually, so within a month of the tragedy, they renamed the other station and no longer was called Malbone Street. And it changed to Empire Boulevard.
Okay.
They did that almost immediately, which... Mm-hmm. PR move of like, yeah, let's just change the name.
Yeah, yeah, then I'm sure nobody will notice that this is the exact same place that the train used to go when it derailed, right? Do you think they're going to change the name of that fundraiser next year in Nantucket? So that Jordan won't know where to go. But she'll think, oh, it's not happening. I shouldn't go out there this year.
Well, then they should just send her a train ticket to it next year.
There you go. There you go. Jordan, you can get here by train. Okay, so I did have one honorable mention for you. I just wanted to throw this out there. I don't know if you have any further honorable mentions for me. But I did want to point out that Jordan did show up to the Super Bowl party carrying a purse that looked like a Duraflame log. I mean, it literally looked like a fake wood log, like you would put into your fake fireplace. Just absolutely incredible. I mean, it was like a piece of wood, fake firewood, with a little handle on it. Just absolutely incredible. Like, it looked like she went to Home Depot, purchased one log, and was like, may I have a handle for this? And some person at Home Depot was like, sure, why not? Incredible.
Well, that immediately reminds me of the great Chatsworth train wreck of 1887. It was a hot summer, Chatsworth Township in Illinois. Very hot summer, dry summer. So the train line crews, the railroad crews, were out there doing controlled burns so that they wouldn't deal with some wildfires. Unfortunately, during one of their control burns, they failed to extinguish a control burn before it actually charred a bridge.
Ooh.
And then failed to report said charred bridge. So the next day, when a train full of vacationers from Iowa to Illinois were heading to Niagara Falls, you can go ahead and do the math what happens when they got on the bridge.
Oh, boy. Well, if only somebody had brought their log purse to hold up the bridge, maybe things would have gone differently.
How do you fail to report you accidentally set a bridge on fire?
I have so many questions. I have, like, your Duraflame log bridge caught on fire and no one noticed, and you just thought maybe you wouldn't share that information with other people. Like, incredible. Absolutely incredible. All right, Irby, anything else on these before we move on? Now that you all know the entire history of Dylan Jordan / train disasters.
I guess there's my question is where are we in this train wreck
of
a relationship or something? Are we are we getting people off the train? Are we trying to intervene and get this off the tracks? Are we just sitting here with our popcorn and our lawn chairs and watching this train go off the
I listen, let's just hop off the train and hop on an ocean liner, because I think we are now at the point where the Titanic is sinking and the orchestra is still playing. And yes, I know that's a myth, and if James Cameron made it up, and I don't care, just go with it because it's perfect, and I'm believing that it is true because I want it to be. That's where we're at. We are just shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic, guys. That's where we are. We are fiddling while Rome burns. I mean, pick your fake piece of apocryphal history. Incredible.
Well, it sounds incredible. Like some of the engineers on here, you know, when you got a turn that's rated at 6 miles an hour, it's like, yeah, I'll just take it at 40. No, mm-hmm. You have to take it at 6. Yeah, 40. 40, 36. There we go. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let us know, guys. Like, if, you know, do you enjoy this kind of content? Because RB, I think we could do shipwrecks. I think we could.
There are plenty.
I think we could pick another sports disaster situation, and we could work through some shipwrecks. So, you guys, let us know. Did you like learning? Did you not like learning? Was it just too much Jordan for you? Because I'm very sympathetic to that perspective. So, let us know.
All right, well, Irby, where are we going next? I'm a little afraid to ask.
Not on a train. Well, not anywhere on a train, I hope.
No.
Not a real, not a true train. A metaphorical train wreck known as the AP poll.
Oh, God. I'm jumping out. I'm jumping out.
We are. Yeah, throw myself off the train.
There are two things I want to deal with. Here, we've harped on this, and I want to get y'all's opinion on this too. Before I jump into, my only guess at this point that the AP poll is they have been told, they realize, look, everybody knows we're a joke, nobody cares. Here on November 6th, when we get our first college football rankings out, at that point, nobody cares about the AP poll. I mean, I feel like it's what we're talking about Jurassic Park earlier. It's Dennis Nedry and Dotson. Mm-hmm. Meeting in Costa Rica. It's like, Dotson, we have to see, nobody cares. Nobody cares about the AP. Mm-hmm. So in response to that, they told their people, hey, be controversial, do whatever, drop teams way out of the rankings and bring them way back in, you know, do things that don't make sense, because that's where we're at. There's decisions that are happening here of like, uh-huh. What are y'all doing? You're just making it up as you go, right? Am I crazy?
No, they are just, I think this is exactly what it is. They're trying to. They're going so over the top, stupid, so they can stay relevant. And by relevant, I mean people talking about them in the news. They're not actually relevant now. Not with a 12-team playoff.
I don't know if I agree with you guys. I don't think they're that self-aware.
There you go.
Hang on.
Accidental success.
Are you suggesting that all this is? Not some scheme from AP pollsters? Like, they really are this awful? Ooh, I didn't think of that.
Yes, that is exactly what I'm suggesting.
I never considered that. That could mainly because I didn't want to. Oh, man.
There you go. So, all right, well, that leads me to what really matters here. Look, we can harp on this. We can have problems with it, and we will. We will continue. So let's solve some problems. I'll give you mine. I want to get y'all's opinion too on this. You're an AP voter now. Let's just say you're an AP voter. How are you going about business? Like, what is it you're doing specifically? I know that there's plenty of conversations out there about conference strengths. We talk about common opponents seem to be a pretty simple one. You know, obviously head-to-head results matters. You know, you look at Texas and Oklahoma just had a huge game. That Texas absolutely dominated the second half, and they're still 7 spots behind Oklahoma, even though there's a 1-loss there. You know, but strength of schedule, which I fully believe is a progressive thing. I love the new metric that's coming out with the college football rankings, the record strength, in which it's going to focus on how your opponent continues to look throughout the season, so that if you did lose to a good team, you're not really getting penalized for that. Because you played a good team. If you beat a good team, you're going to get rewarded for that. And definitely pushing that reward of the offseason or the out-of-conference games. So for me, and I can give you specifics on here, I've never been a fan of doing stuff the first month. Understand if I'm now an AP voter, I have to do that. For me, it's always a whole body of work. I can't stand when I see these knee-jerk reactions of, well, you just lost to this team. It's like, okay, well, why that team? Well, you know, well, they had a bad record. Yeah, but they were dealing with an injury that is no longer an injury. They got their quarterback back, so their record may have been 1-3. They're not really a 1-3 team. The quarterback's healthy now. This is the team who we thought they were. I feel like whole body of work is getting overlooked, and we've moved towards knee-jerk reaction of one game. I'm also – look, I scoreboard – I hate when it says score. If you're preaching to me, well, what was the score difference? That tells me you didn't actually watch the game, because there's plenty of football games out there that we've seen that a team loses by 8. They were never actually in the game. And then there's other examples of a team that loses by 10 where it was actually, this game was back and forth up until the last minute. So I've never liked that aspect of it because I think it's an individual game. How about you guys? Like what are big factors for you if you're a voter, if you're actually making these? And use real examples if you need to.
I've got a few of those. I think, first of all, everything you listed, I absolutely 100% am on board with you on that one. And I think this is why when we talk about the college football playoff, how they did last year, how we said on this show, they pretty well got it right. And I think that's why, is they are looking at it differently than the AP voter. So, but just to add on to what you listed here, don't elevate a team without a signature win into the top 5. I'm looking at you, Oklahoma. Not one signature win. Texas throttled them. They had no business being, what were they, 6 at the time? They had no business being up there. So no, without a signature win, you don't get the rapid rise. Maybe that's the best way to put it. If you have a signature win, you get the rapid rise. I'm also, in this age where we have this every year now. You know, this is not relatively new, but the number of them is getting higher, and that's those marquee matchups, week 1, week 2. Ohio State and Texas, 1-3. The winner of that game is number 1. The loser of that game is number 3. Let's not overcomplicate this. So there's so many instances where Samantha Penn State early in the year didn't play and dropped. How are you going to drop a team that didn't play? Talk about those knee-jerk reactions. That's just flat-out stupid. So those are things I would change. Samantha, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this relates to, and like, I'm sorry, you guys, I know this sounds like we're all biased about Penn State and Texas, and we are, we'll be honest, but I think there's a valid case here. I mean, let me take Texas, for example, because Penn State was obviously very overranked, and some things went very wrong there. But yeah, there was no discernible reason why they should be dropping in the rankings on a week that they are idle, in a situation in which the person who passed them did not complete a signature win. But Texas is the really weird one here, and I think, you know, that's where I think you look at where this team has been all over this poll. They, you know, they're at the top, and then they fall too far, and then they fall completely out, and now they're back, but they're like 20, and the team that beat them is suddenly, where's Oklahoma now? Like, it's just
7 up. Yeah.
This is insane. Absolutely insane. So, I mean, the easy solution to this is get rid of it. It's useless, right? But the problem is, it's like AP poll, you know how this is. It's like power rankings, right? This thing is like a meth lab. If you shut it down, another 20 will pop up in its place.
Yeah.
So you can't just get rid of it. So I think the best thing you can do with this thing is to devalue it, which is kind of what we're doing with the playoff rankings, is the more irrelevant this thing becomes, the less anybody will pay attention to it and the less it will matter until it basically ceases to exist. So we're already kind of on the path. The other thing I think that you probably need to do here is these guys cannot keep up, right? Like, these voters, they have admitted to not watching all of the games. They're not paying attention to things that they need to pay attention to. They clearly are overwhelmed by the volume of information that they're dealing with. So let's make it a little bit easier and say, we're only going to rank 15 teams from now on. We don't need to rank 25 teams. 15 is plenty. It's almost twice what you're going to get in a playoff situation. I mean, well, I guess not almost twice, but 15's enough. You know what I mean? That's going to show you basically who the playoff teams would be, as well as the bubble teams, if you had 15. So, like, maybe we need to make it easier for these people to do their jobs, because clearly they're overwhelmed by the volume of information they have to deal with, and perhaps they would be able to look at each game and each individual candidate for ranking with a little bit more nuance if they had less teams to look at.
You know, it's interesting because you brought up power rankings. When power rankings are less volatile than the AP poll, it's a problem.
Well, but power rankings aren't—they're not real. This isn't a real thing, right? It's a made-up clickbait thing that people
sure.
do. They don't—it's completely arbitrary. So we're trying to get away from the idea of arbitrariness, right? So if you're telling me that you're saying, okay, you think the power rankings are more stable, and power rankings are by definition arbitrary because there is no universal way to do this, that's a huge problem, right? Like you just said, something that is completely made up is more stable. Than something that is supposed to be highly formulaic and very important. So, again, I'm back to the idea that, because I think you're right about that, I'm back to the idea that the quicker we can make this thing so irrelevant that it just ceases to exist, the better.
Yes.
Well, and you hit perfectly on there about that. That was, for me, the last straw was when I heard about that, that AP voters are openly admitting, oh, yeah, I don't watch all these games. Done. Then your vote means nothing. Like, that is, I can't even, like, okay, then what is the point? Like, I might as well, I'm all half joking. I was like, we should do it then. Like, we're actually watching the game, whatever.
This is like when you get those, like, senators that, like, can't find a major city in their own state on a map. Like, so let's get you to bed, Grandpa. Like,
yeah. No, it's that, and then it's also, college football rankings, please don't change what you're doing. Until November 6th.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is if that's what we have to deal with, if we have to deal with this, you know, less than relevant BS, so be it, to keep that thing purish. I mean, it's not going to be completely pure, but pretty close. Because that's what we need. You need 2 months. You need plenty of time. I go back to, you mentioned it, the Texas one. Like, let's be honest about the Texas draw. It's because the AP voters thought, oh, well, Arch is a bust. No, he's in his fifth, sixth start of his career.
Yep.
Calm the freak down.
It also doesn't matter, right? That's not relevant. It doesn't matter whether he is. It's only where does this team as a whole sit relative to the other teams here. It doesn't matter whether the quarterback is better or worse than anyone expected, because we're not ranking expectations. We are ranking on the quality of the body of work of the entire football team. And it doesn't matter if that guy was way better or way worse, whatever that means. Oh, this is so bad. Like, yeah, we need to quarantine those people, because I don't want those people, the AP people, to ever cross paths with the college football playoff people. Like, we need to make sure that these two groups of people never meet, right? Because I don't want the contamination it could seep in. You know, like, it's like, it might be like the mound portal. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I don't know, like, you have a poltergeist, and then the poltergeist sees something else that it likes, and it latches onto that, and then, you know, marry the two should meet.
All right, anything else on this one, Irby?
No, it's painful. November 6th, it's almost here. Then we get real rankings.
Yes, very much. I'm also very curious what those rankings are, because the AP's been all over the map. I have no bearing on what to expect. So, all right. Well, speaking of college football, we've got some very interesting teams that are not where they normally are at this point in the season. I'm talking about teams that are threatening to be in that college football playoff poll that weren't in it last year. So I've got a few here. Now, we're not going to talk about, you know, some of the obvious ones that would be bought here, but I'm going to give you a list. I've got five teams. We're going to play buying or not buying here with these teams. Okay? So this is for making the college football playoff. Not winning it. Making it. Very, very clear distinction. This is, do you think this team is going to make it into the college football playoff? All right? Everybody good?
I'm ready.
All right. Okay. Right out of the gate, the Indiana Hoosiers. Buying or not buying?
Oh, buying. Look at the schedule. It's a Big Ten team with a soft schedule. I'll buy for sure. They're going to get killed by some bad, like, second-round opponent. But, yeah, I'll buy.
All right, Irby.
Yes, I'm buying as well. I think they've got one tough game left.
All right. Ole Miss. Are we buying Miss?
Yeah, I'll buy.
Yeah, Irby.
No.
No.
I know they beat LSU, but they struggled to beat Washington State. You're going to have a hiccup like that again against Georgia or Oklahoma, and it's going to, or Florida. You've got those three games. They're going to have those hiccups there. I'm not buying.
Irby, we're talking about the number four team in the AP poll.
I'm aware.
By the way, I'm buying Indiana, and I'm also selling on Ole Miss. All right. Here's a fun one for Irby and me. Texas Tech. Samantha, you going to buy or sell Texas Tech?
Buy.
Buying Tech. Irby?
I am buying as well. Got one game left with BYU. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't have real schedules like Indiana.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And then you'll see BYU again in the Big 12 championship.
See, and when these conferences gripe about how many teams from the Big Ten and the SEC are in the playoff, I'm just going to point to their schedules.
Like, yes, thank you. Exactly.
Like, seriously?
And by the way, that is also why I am buying Ole Miss, because I guarantee you they are better than whoever wins the Big 12. So there you go.
Fair enough. All right. Couple of here that I don't know how you guys are going to go. I kind of figured how you were going to go on these other ones. I am also buying Tech, by the way. Georgia Tech. Georgia no. Tech. No?
No.
Irby?
No. No.
I am buying that they will make the playoffs, and it's because of the remaining schedule. And the ACC will get at least two teams into the playoffs.
Okay.
Who are you getting rid of?
All they have to do, what they're going to face, Florida or Miami.
Yeah, so Miami.
Miami and Georgia Tech will both make the playoffs.
Okay, so you think?
I think Georgia Tech can necessarily, like, they may lose that game against Georgia. They're rivalry game before Georgia, but that you're still in the ACC championship game before that. If they are sitting in position to make the playoffs and they lose to Miami in the ACC championship game, as we've seen in the past, I don't think they get punished enough to fall completely out of the playoffs. And we will have two ACC teams.
Unless there's another ACC team that looks better than they do and they get embarrassed.
Who, Virginia?
That's the thing I'm tripping over. Maybe. Also, I don't know that we're guaranteed two ACC teams. I want to put that out there, too.
No. That's valid. I mean, it's the risk. And Virginia's your next one. Maybe Duke. Like, that actually will end up looking like a decent win if they can beat Duke.
Right,
they thought
yeah.
Florida State, but then Florida State remembered who they were.
Well, Florida State was themselves from the equation.
Put all their effort into beating Alabama, and then they forget, okay, that was it. We're done for the year.
Listen, you know, sometimes you just gotta have a short season, right? You take your ball and you go home.
I am also not buying Georgia Tech. I'm with Samantha on this one. All right. Last one before we start talking some mascots. Show favorite, Vanderbilt.
Ooh, sell. I want to buy.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. I would like to buy. I wish I could, but I have to sell on this, unfortunately.
Yeah. Irby?
Yes, I know, Bo, you may have to be careful here since we get to watch Vanderbilt this season.
We do, yes.
Shortly, but they are 0-1 in a four-game juggernaut of a stretch against Bama, LSU, Missouri, and Texas.
Yeah.
Not a good way to start that. Yeah, love them, but no, not a playoff team.
I agree, but they are building. See, maybe we're talking about them differently over the next couple of years. All right. Let's talk some mascots with the baseball playoff teams that are left, okay? So, I thought it'd be fun to match mascot with one of the players on the team I'm talking about. Which player on each of these four remaining playoff teams, which player most looks like the team mascot?
Oh, no.
All right. And this was actually, this was a little harder than I thought it would be. It really was. All right, so Toronto, their mascot is Ace, right? I went with Mason Fluharty.
Interesting. I would have gone Andrés Giménez here.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Derby, how about you? Do you have somebody else in mind?
No, I did, but I like the Fluharty. Like, sorry, kid. I mean, I guess that's kind of a, hey, you look like a Blue Jay. I like that. Like I think it's his eyebrows. He looks like a Blue Jay.
Thank you. Like that's what I thought. Like it was the whole like facial structure that just
need somebody really beaky. You know, like
yeah.
Today, we have somebody on the team who's very beaky. We need someone beaky.
Yeah. Mason doesn't have much of a beak.
No, and neither does Andres. I'm trying to think. See, I can't think of anybody on this team who is quite beaky. It's got to be a relief pitcher, right? It's a very relief pitcher-like face, you know, that I'm thinking of. I don't know. We have any Blue Jays fans in the audience? If we do.
Oh, yeah, let us know.
Like Ace. Who is your beakiest fellow?
Is it Santander?
Oh, that's not a bad pick.
Oh.
Yeah, he's a bit beaky. Yeah, that could work. I like that. Mm-hmm. Or do we have anybody whose hair is pronounced in a way that is a bit Blue Jay-like? I can't think of anyone off the top of my head.
Yeah, I can't either.
I don't think they have anybody who has that kind of hair. It's kind of like it's the Flock of Seagulls haircut, right? Which no one is sporting as of right now, particularly on this team, which is too bad. Too bad. That's instead of these horrible little mustaches they're all wearing. Somebody get the Flock of Seagulls haircut.
You know, it's too bad George Kirby's not a Blue Jay, because that would have been a good one.
Yeah, you know, his face kept popping in my head while we were talking about it.
Yeah.
it looks like George Kirby. It looks like George Kirby. So, I mean, could we do that? Would we allow that? Would we allow an opponent to be the most? I think we should allow that.
How about we
I
do,
will say, we he, do, he is pitching tonight like a Blue Jay.
Yeah. How about we can do honorable mentions that don't necessarily have to be on that team.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah. So now we're looking for, just anyone in baseball who looks like the Blue Jay. So George Kirby would be, I think, a good candidate for that.
Yeah.
I think who else? I mean, Tanner Bibee looks a little bit like the Blue Jay. And he has weird hair. So, yeah, those are my honorable mentions.
Mm-hmm. All right, Irby, anything you want to toss in here for Ace before we move on to the Mariner Moose?
No. I like the choices. I'm going to go with Kirby just because, like I said, he is pitching like he's a Blue Jay tonight. Yikes.
Yeah.
Not George's night.
No. Not at all. All right. The Mariner Moose for the Seattle Mariners. This one was relatively simple because there's only one person on that team that I thought got close enough to the Mariner Moose, and I'm going with one big dumper, Cal Raleigh.
I don't think I can do that because his face doesn't look anything like a moose face.
Yeah, but he's got that. I don't know. It was the nose for Cal Raleigh that like there's like the big.
But he's a bit
honk
no,
of a nose. Yeah,
I think Suarez.
You think Suarez?
Yeah, the nose and the shape of the face, you know, because he has that sort of, like, oblong, shapeless face.
Hmm.
Much more like the moose. And you could, if you got enough hairspray, do his gross hair up into some horns. Antlers.
There's
that
an image.
That is a Santa Claus joke, if you're paying attention at home. There you go.
It's almost that time of year. We're getting close.
It's always Santa Claus time of year.
Art, Urban, about you?
You mentioned the hair, putting that up like Moose Antler. So because of that and the facial hair, Andres Munoz.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
See that? Okay.
Yep. The Mexican Moose. I like it.
All right. Well, let's switch it over to the National League Series. The Milwaukee Brewers have Bernie Brewer and that glorious, ginormous mustache. Now, not a lot of guys on the Brewers have a mustache or that big, round face, but I did find one Joey Ortiz. If you put a big yellow mustache on that face, it's very close to Bernie the Brewer.
Yeah, I can see that. I really think, yeah, you know, this is disappointing because it's actually not that hard to look like Bernie Brewer as a baseball player, and they don't mm-hmm. have anyone.
They didn't,
yeah. Tell, which is disappointing. So because what I started doing is looking for who looked like the sausages. And there are a lot of candidates for that. There are a lot of people that look like they could be in the sausage race, which is really, really a sad look for your face. Not the best looking baseball team, I have to say. If we were ranking these baseball teams that were of attractiveness, I'm sorry that they would end up last. So, not great. But I can see where you're coming from on the Joey Ortiz thing.
Yeah. Irby?
Joey Ortiz looks like the probationary firefighter who finally got to grow facial hair. the miss here, and I'm going to go back a ways, so I have to go former player. The one that could have always worked perfectly would have been Corey Hart. He could have grown that blonde mustache. It would have mm-hmm. worked well.
All right, Samantha, anything on that before we go to the Dodgers?
No.
So the Dodgers don't actually have a mascot.
Lame.
So, I know. So we're going to use Decoy Ohtani for this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Who looks most like Decoy Ohtani? Now, I was really kind of focused on the nose for this. Decoy kind of has that long nose. So the only one that I found, at least in my opinion here, that came close was Hyesung Kim, the long nose.
Hmm.
What do you think?
So part of the problem is Decoy mostly looks like Nadine,
right.
My dog. So mm-hmm. if anybody who's seen Nadine's photos, Decoy is like a shrunken Nadine. And one of the things that was repeatedly pointed out about Nadine, and this is true of Decoy too, is the eyes. They have those eyes that almost mm-hmm. look like mm-hmm. eyeliner. Like mm-hmm. it almost looks like if you look at like Egyptian sarcophagi for pharaohs, they have that eyeliner, that very, very heavy coal that comes out in like almost like a bat wing from the corner of the eye. So I was mm-hmm. trying to think of who had like really heavy eyelashes on that team. Ooh. Like that. And I think it's Kike Hernandez.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. I can see that. Irby, how about you?
Now I want to put the eyeliner on. I'm looking at my options, and we put that eyeliner on Blake Snell. Would it work?
Yes.
It would. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although Blake Snell, wait, what is Blake Snell's dog now? We didn't think Blake Snell had, I think it was a French bulldog. He does not look like his dog. You know, they talk about how people start to look like their dogs. And I don't think Ohtani and Decoy look alike. And I don't think Blake Snell and the French Bulldog look alike. But I was just, is there anybody else who looks like the French Bulldog on that team?
I mean, nothing comes to mind, but...
I feel like a lot of baseball players look like French Bulldogs. I just can't think of anyone on the Dodgers who currently looks like a French Bulldog. I'm going to think on that. I don't know. Guys, if you disagree... We would love to hear your thoughts on it.
Absolutely.
So, especially if this is your team, you might be more sort of intimately familiar with like the facial expressions that a lot of these people make when you watch them 162 times a year. So, if you have a differing opinion, please do let us know, because this was harder than we thought it would be. I think, though.
Way harder than I thought it would be. Yeah.
So, anyway, interesting stuff. Or if you have somebody from another team who you just think is a dead ringer. For one of these, let us know about that, too.
Although George Kirby is ace is probably about as dead of a ringer as you're
Yeah,
find.
No, I like that. that's a very, very strong fit.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, quick note. We are off the air next week. We've got a week off coming up. So, we'll be back in 2 weeks. 2 weeks from today, we'll be back. But for this week, we're done. We're out of here. Wherever you're listening to Lollygagging Sports, give us a like, subscribe to the show, help us out with that algorithm so we get some more lollygaggers in here. But for now, watch some playoff baseball. It's good for you.